You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Science is interesting, and if you don't agree, you can fuck off.
Alright, so today on Dear Science, we have a guest covering Professor Steve Poynting for the next few weeks. A very warm welcome to Alan Blackman, Professor of Chemistry at AUT, who joins us live in the studio now. How you doing?
Oh, pretty good.
That's
pretty
good. Awesome. Good stuff. So, first up, we're talking about how the last person to walk on the moon died this week.
Yeah, kind of a end of an era, I guess. Possibly many of your listeners might not remember the Apollo era, which sort of all started with good old John F. Kennedy saying that he was going to put a man, quote-unquote, on the moon by the end of the 60s, just to beat the Russians. That's all there was to it. It was basically just a big competition, I reckon. Mm-hmm. And so as a result of that, they put lots and lots and lots of money into a big old space race. And the result of that was obviously Apollo 11, which in 1969 landed on the moon, and Neil Armstrong being the famous first person to walk on the moon. And after that, there were several Apollo missions all the way up to Apollo 17. The one that probably everyone's heard of is Apollo 13, thanks to the movie, and that's the one that didn't quite make it there. They had the explosion on board and had to get back to Earth somehow. And they did, in their best American traditions. And I think public interest started waning in the Apollo program after that. It became sort of a bit run-of-the-mill, and they actually had three extra missions planned, Apollo 18 to 20, but they got cancelled, and budget cuts of NASA, etc., etc. So Apollo 17 was the last one that made it to the moon. And the commander of that mission was a guy called Eugene Cernan, and he had been into space twice previously, first on Gemini 9A, where he became one of the very few people who had circumnavigated the globe tethered to a spaceship, so doing a spacewalk and going around the Earth a couple of times, which is kind of cool when you think about it. And awesome. Then he was also on Apollo 10, which was the precursor to Apollo 11, and that actually orbited the moon, and it got within about 15 kilometres of landing. And you kind of think, gosh, you go all that way and just, you know, didn't quite get there in the end. But and he was on that, and then he was commander of Apollo 17, and he was the last man, again, quote-unquote, on the moon, because he was the last of the two to re-enter the spacecraft when it took off to come back to Earth. So he left his footprints on the moon last. So there was 12 people that have walked on the moon, and six of them are now dead, and all of the other ones are in their 80s. So he
did that in 1972, right?
1972, yeah.
I didn't realize that no one's been on the moon since then. When I was looking into it before, I was like, why has it been so long since someone's been on the moon?
That's a really good question. I guess ask the US government, I suppose, because, you know, they're the people that fund NASA. And as I said, I think it was a lot to do with sort of public opinion and stuff, and that it was becoming a bit routine. And so what they did after that was they did Skylab, which was an orbiting laboratory. And so that was their next big thing after that. And then after that, of course, the space shuttle, et cetera, et cetera. But nobody has ever been back to the moon afterwards. And the reason for that, I don't know. I mean, back when I was a kid, they had like 2001 A Space Odyssey and Space 1999 and, you know, things like this. And in all of those things, we had bases on the moon by the year 2000, you know, and we don't. Mm. And I guess one might argue, what's the purpose of, you know, going back when they've gone further afield and everything, and they're talking about going to Mars now. But, you know, that's going to be a long way in the future, I guess. But yeah, I guess it's a part of probably my childhood that is coming to an end, I suppose. As I said, you know, they're all in their 80s now, all the other folk that have walked on the moon, and they'll probably all be gone in a decade or two. And our last touch with the moon, I suppose, in that respect. So, very, very sad. The one thing I did find when studying this was, if any of you want to go onto the net and relive the entire Apollo 17 mission, which is about 300 hours worth, it's there on the web. A thing called apollo17.org. Somebody has lovingly got all of the audio tapes, all of the video tapes, all of the photos taken from that mission, and put it into basically real time. So you can start from the liftoff, and 300 hours later, you're splashdown. So
that's awesome.
Quite remarkable. Absolutely incredible. Yeah.
Cool. And so Should we move on to the next one?
Yep.
Awesome.
Yep.
So next up, we've got how the US Army want to design biodegradable plant-growing bullets. Can you tell me about this? This seems kind of, I don't know, like, let's kill people, but more in a more eco-friendly way.
Yeah, well, you'd think it was April the 1st, wouldn't you? Because words fail me with this one. Again, sort of having a look at the latest science stories in preparation for this, and this just kind of leapt out as the headline that basically the US Army want to make biodegradable bullets that contain seeds, which then, once they fall on the ground, the bullet casings biodegrade, the seeds germinate, and voila, you've got... A plant. I mean, it's madness. You couldn't make this stuff up, could you? apparently, the reasoning behind it is that on the training rifle ranges and everything in the States, of which there must be many, otherwise they wouldn't bother doing this, they've got a lot of waste shells, shell casings, bullets, etc., which are made of metal, and some of the metals are a bit environmentally nasty, like lead and stuff like that. So basically, the Department of Defense has put out a tender for somebody to come along and use a composite material that apparently has already been made. So they've made this sort of plasticky composite material into which they can embed seeds. This material is biodegradable, so you can stick it in the ground, it biodegrades, the seeds then can become active after the material biodegrades. It takes a few months apparently, and they germinate and away they go and they sprout. So the quote is that they want to grow these things in, or they want the seeds to grow environmentally beneficial plants that eliminate ammunition debris and contaminants. So that's the theory behind the whole thing, and it's just, isn't it a sign of the times? I mean, yeah. a certain person's going to be, you know, declared president in a couple of days or whatever, and it just seems to go perfectly with that, really. So
yeah, for sure, absolutely. Yeah. So do we know that this is just like a because you said that it was like a for the training rifle.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. And will it just stay there, or will it kind of be an army-wide thing? Or
are they going to kill people with kindness? You know. Yeah. Supposedly, from what I've read, it is just for the training thing. So, you know, for America, I don't think that they'd be particularly worried about sort of, you know, growing plants in other countries, really, unless they were noxious ones. Now there's a thought.
Yeah, but leave a garden in the Middle East somewhere.
Yeah, those of you who are interested can look it up on the web, but don't.
Go
on.
Yeah, wow. That's, yeah, priorities. Anyway.
Yes, indeed.
And so the third thing that you wanted to talk about was about how carbon can exceed its 4-bond limit. Now, you're going to have to break this down to me in very basic terms, because I don't know what that means.
Okay, so any listeners who have studied chemistry at high school or university will have some sort of inkling about this, that you're taught from day one that carbon forms 4 bonds. Now, carbon is the basis of life. Okay, we're made up of carbon atoms that are bonded to hydrogen atoms and oxygen atoms, nitrogen, phosphorus, things like that. That's basically it. That's what we're made of. And in all of those compounds that make us up, and in all of the carbon compounds that make up nature, all your plants, all your animals, etc., etc., basically carbon forms 4 bonds. That's pretty much a rule, as much as there are ever any rules in science. So, of course, somebody has now come along and disproved that so-called rule. And they've found a compound in which carbon bonds to 6 other carbon atoms, not 4, or it forms 6 bonds, let's say. There's a slight difference there, but we won't worry about that. And so it's extremely, extremely unusual. And the way that they figured this out was using a technique called X-ray crystallography, where they take a very small crystal of your material, they shoot X-rays at it. The X-rays bounce off the crystal in particular ways, and they form spots, which can then be deconvoluted using mathematics, and it's very, very, very complicated. But basically what happens is that they can then get a three-dimensional picture of the molecules in that crystal, and they can get those down to accuracies of about 10 to the minus 12 of a meter, which is very small. Mm-hmm. Very, very, very small. So a thousandth of a nanometer, if you know what a nanometer is. And it had been sort of thought that this had been going on since about the 70s. Somebody came along in the 1970s and made this particular material and thought that this is what had happened, but they couldn't get the proof. And so basically it's taken 40-odd years for somebody to get the proof. And this is, you know, it will be in all the chemistry textbooks from now on, basically.
Yeah, because I was going to say, this must
exception.
Be big.
Yeah. Oh, no, it is. It's big and it's unusual and it's an exception to the rule, and it just goes to show that nothing in science is ever absolute, and any scientist who says it is doesn't really know what science is all about. So science is only as certain as your last discovery, basically, and then you can't say with absolute certainty what's going to happen in science in the future. You know, you can make a damn good guess, but things always come up to surprise us, and if we knew it was going to happen in the future anyway with science, we wouldn't bother doing it, because, you know, what's the point?
Yeah,
we'd know everything, which we obviously don't.
Yeah.
So this is just it's a nice little story and of enormous interest to the chemist amongst us, obviously, which I'm one. Perhaps not quite so much to your listeners, but
I mean, I think it is fascinating in the sense that it is like what you say, that it's kind of like this small sort of thing that might seem insignificant to some people will have to be put into every single textbook now, and like a footnote of things, and
absolutely,
you know,
the exception to the rule.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And it's a nice little discovery, and it'll make these people's names. You know, they'll be in all the textbooks, you know, along with their discovery. So that's kind of cool.
Awesome stuff. Cool. Did you have anything else to tell us about today, or should we wrap it up?
No, I think we'll probably. Yep, I think we'll wrap it up.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you so much for coming in, Alan.
Not a problem.
And you'll be back next week with some other cool stuff.
I shall indeed.
Awesome. Cool.
Cool.
All
thanks.
Right.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.